payments industry is both complex and ever-changing, with new regulations, rising costs, and an increasingly essential customer experience to consider. Retailers need to stay informed. Retail Relay is your weekly source of bite-sized payments insights brought to you by CMSPI, an independent global payments consultancy supporting merchants to maximize the value in their supply chain. From retail trends to regulatory updates, we cover it all. By bringing unique visibility into trends across different industries and channels, we dissect the complexities into digestible insights. If you want to learn about all things payments, you're in the right place. Hello and welcome to CMSPI's Retail Relay. I'm Robbie, speaking out of Manchester in the UK.
And I'm Callum, speaking out of Atlanta in Georgia in the US.
In this episode, we're going to be taking a very detailed look at the share prices of, and in general, financial performance of, the different suppliers throughout the industry. So we're going to be looking at players in the card space, so people like the card schemes and card acquirers. We'll then take a look at the cash industry and how it's been affected by COVID in terms of the financial markets. And finally, some of the real success stories haven't been in cash or card, but actually in the alternative payment method space as well. So we'll be looking into that too. So for our first topic, we're going to talk about cards. And of course, cards make up a huge proportion of consumer spend in essentially most markets or most developed markets globally. And there's been an incredible impact of COVID on a number of these companies' financials. So I think we'll start with the big dogs of Visa and MasterCard, and the card schemes are a pretty good barometer of how the industry is faring as a whole. And whilst the year-on-year changes or look reasonably good, actually, Visa and MasterCard have been hit pretty severely by the pandemic.
Yeah, so one of the main areas that have been affected by is cross-border international transactions, which might seem like a surprise because people might be thinking, well, that's probably only, I don't know, 5 or 10% of all the transactions. But in reality, that's 25 to 30% of their income, given how high scheme fees are in the international space. So that's a big revenue stream for them that's been a big hit for them. It doesn't all completely show up on the Q1 financials. I think that's just simply because Q1 is January and February and half of March were good trading conditions. And obviously, it's only the second half of March that's really been impacted. But it's hit their share price, that's for sure. So if we take Visa, for example, Visa's share price went from $213 on February the 19th this year, all the way down to a trough of $136 on March the 23rd. And it's since rallied, and it's now at $189 as of June the 15th. But obviously, that's still, you know, a reasonably large amount behind the peak, and it's definitely hit them. And MasterCard is a very similar story in terms of the big drop and the kind of the steadier rise.
Yeah, and I mean, even saying that, the card schemes are still up year on year, you know, Visa moving into June and MasterCard as well, actually around the 16, 17% higher than in 2019. So that's obviously primarily driven by the significant growth seen throughout the period leading up to June. But in general, throughout the pandemic, Visa and MasterCard have actually performed significantly better than a number of their peers and even just generally businesses in the financial sector. At one point, Visa actually became the most valuable financial services company in the world simply because they hadn't declined as much as some of the largest global banks. But in terms of their actual peers, so other card schemes, a much more negative story for American Express and Discover, and American Express particularly because of the different services they provide and how overexposed they are almost to cross-border.
Yep, Amex is the real one that suffered very badly. as you say, Robbie, I mean, it makes perfect sense. They've got a lot of exposure to airlines, travel companies, hotels, you know, car rental, things like that, that are typically, from what we see, credit card heavy. I mean, in the US, for example, an airline might be 75 to 80% credit cards as opposed to debit cards. And a lot of that is going to be Amex spending. I mean, Amex has got about 30% of the credit card industry in the US, but for an airline, it'd be even more than 30%. So those industries barely trading at the moment. Really easy to see why there's been a really big financial hit. And I suppose the interesting thing from a merchant perspective is just how that's going to affect negotiations with Amex going forward. I mean, we know Amex are notoriously very difficult to negotiate with in terms of commercials. But, you know, is this financial hit for Amex going to mean that they're even tougher in terms of negotiations? Or is it going to mean that they're seeing it as even more imperative than ever to get a large merchant base to accept their card products, and that would make it easier? So there's a couple of different counterbalancing considerations there, but we'll see. I mean, Amex to start with wasn't as profitable as Visa and MasterCard. The profit margin was about 25% for Amex against 50 to 60% for Visa and MasterCard. So it was an even smaller buffer to start with. It's going to be interesting to see how they progress.
Yeah, and you can see the hit in the share price. So Amex in April and May, 25% down year on year, which is, you know, significant. Again, Amex in the period leading up to the pandemic had a really good bull run. So this 25% deficit is in the face of strong growth early in the year. Discover, potentially the smallest of the global card schemes, you might be able to say, has been hit even harder than American Express, down about 50% year on year in April and May, although they did rally in June to only minus 27% year on year. So overall, though, for those, you know, maybe the third and fourth largest global players, of course, you have UnionPay and JCB as well, but the outlook isn't quite as good for them as it is for Visa and MasterCard. And one of the big things for card schemes actually at the moment is that with all of the renewed focus on e-commerce, where for a lot of these schemes, fees are significantly higher, there's a renewed focus on regulation. And if regulation goes the wrong direction in the card scheme's eyes, then there is significant scope for revenues to fall going forward. But until that point, the regulation is actually reviewed, and we sincerely hope it is, but it still remains in the balance. The future for card schemes is particularly uncertain, but the cross-border hit is really what's driving the reduction in the premiums that these shares are trading at the moment.
Yeah, it's not just for schemes, actually, Robbie. It's the acquirers as well. So what we've noticed is the acquiring industry actually generally is doing okay, but there's definitely a bifurcation between the more digitally savvy acquirers and the more traditional acquirers. So for example, Adyen, which has always positioned itself as a very innovative strategic acquirer, is up, I believe, 70% year on year, which is phenomenal and has kept growing throughout the pandemic. But if we compare that to the likes of Fiserv, FIS, Global Payments, more traditional acquirers, they're still doing okay. They're up about 15% year on year. But we have noticed a little bit of a hit during the pandemic for those guys.
Yeah, and it's other players as well, like Worldline, who are, particularly with the Ingenico merger, heavily exposed to card present because they do so much work in actual card terminal manufacturing, which of course isn't exactly a booming industry at the moment. Although, saying that, in the future, you know, as customers begin to pay with cards more often at the point of sale, then the outlook for those card present focused acquirers is still positive. It's just not quite as positive as it is for, like you said, Cal, those technologically advanced and strategic acquirers, the likes of Adyen. You have Stripes and Squares and SumUps as well that focus on small business. As small business moves even further online, those are the acquirers that are really going to benefit from the new post-pandemic landscape. So overall then, in the cards industry, it's a mixed story, but in general, because of the ability to operate online, a lot of these businesses have performed relatively well, and strong performance towards the end of last year and even the first quarter of this year has meant that they've not seen a hugely significant hit to share prices. So moving on to our second topic of the day, and we're going to look at cash. Now, of course, if we said that card in general was winning in terms of the stock market performance, then of course that has to come at the expense of someone else. And unfortunately for the cash industry, at least in terms of their share prices, that is very much the story. If we look at, in general, the largest four merchant-focused cash companies in the world are Brink's, Loomis, G4S, and Prosegur. Then across those four companies, the sort of average year-on-year change for June is minus 40%. So those companies have lost 40% off of their share values. Brink's is down 42%, which is slightly better than they were in May. Loomis is actually only down 18%, but Loomis historically have been one of the most profitable cash in transit providers. So that's why they are slightly higher in terms of their performance than the others. G4S, Prosegur Cash, again, roughly 50% down year on year. So it's clear that investor sentiment isn't hugely positive for these companies.
Yeah, and a lot of these cash providers were really struggling to start with. You know, we've been speaking about cash declining kind of steadily year on year over the past decade or so. And this has just become, you know, a snap, click of a finger, really big, unexpected jolt. And there's a lot of people that are saying, you know, how are cash supply chains going to survive this? You know, to what extent is this business model going to be profitable from now on? Is it just going to turn into a utility? And that it is, at this point in time, still a legitimate question. I mean, it's clear where this is coming from. You touched on it, Robbie. So it's what we're seeing is cannibalization of cash by card during a pandemic, contactless, and even just conventional card products. There's a perception that cash is more likely to spread germs and cash usage is down. A lot of merchants aren't accepting cash. The good news, if we're being positive for cash, is that our analysis at least suggests that the sites that are still accepting cash, cash spending is actually quite robust. It's higher than you would expect. So with the pandemic recovering, so for example, on Monday, June 15, we've seen the UK and France open up a lot of retail stores, might expect to see a little bit of a comeback for cash. So obviously that would have a positive knock-on effect for your Prosegurs and your Brink's, etc. But right at this moment in time, it's not a good picture at all. It's looking very negative for their business models.
Yes, so I suppose the takeaway for merchants is that you need to be careful about the viability of your suppliers going forward and making sure they're not in financial trouble. But at the same time, I certainly suspect that the market has overreacted to the decline of cash and the general sentiment in the media and in general being pushed and promoted by, quite frankly, businesses that have an interest in the card side of payments. So something to keep track of, but the significant decline in the performance of these cash-focused businesses is potentially something that's been a little bit overstated. Moving into our final section of the episode and away from the traditional cash and card space of the payments industry, there are a number of new providers that have been entering the market for a number of years, but now are really starting to gain footholds. And this is things like not just online in terms of PayPal and buy now, pay later, but equally in the card present space in store, where you have Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, Google Pay, that are all gaining a lot of traction with customers that either in the in-store space want to avoid using, you know, physical cards and the higher limit of contactless for the pays as they're known is something that's attractive now or more attractive than it used to be for customers. And online in terms of, you know, buy now, pay later, being able to actually have a handle on your finances and budget over a number of months has been really, really useful to a number of people at this point in time. So now a lot of these alternative payment methods are privately owned. A lot of it is venture capital or, you know, looking to IPO in the future or get bought out by one of the larger financial players. But PayPal, who have been around in the space for a very long time, in February, for example, shares were trading around $120 and they're currently $155 to $160. So whilst they suffered an initial dip actually into March and April, since the beginning of April down at $90 per share, PayPal has just absolutely skyrocketed. And it's really the transition away from in-store spending and the absolute need to accept different payment methods online that has driven this, but particularly small businesses and anyone that wants to get online quickly and start selling, PayPal as a payment method is certainly an easy way to do that.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it, when you compare the share prices for the cash companies, and then you look at the digital payments shooting up. And I think what we've got is kind of a three-pronged approach that we kind of covered here. So we've got the cards that are doing kind of okay. Some are doing better than others. You've got the cash, which is massively down. And then you've got the digital payments, which is hugely up. PayPal, as you say, probably not a surprise. They're very strategically placed for the online market. In most developed countries, have probably got 20% plus of all online transactions. They're the biggest player in the space. So no surprise to see the value of their stock go up. It will just be interesting to see post-pandemic and as stores reopen and maybe as online sales cool off a little bit, how that'll affect their financials. We'll keep track of that. It's definitely interesting. The thing that's interested me even more than that was buy now, pay later. I mean, we're speaking about PayPal. I've seen maybe a 30 or 40%, something like that, increase in their share price. The buy now, pay later numbers are a lot more dramatic.
Yeah, so some even more impressive figures from the buy now, pay later companies. For example, in Australia, one of the most mature markets in terms of buy now, pay later, you have Zip Money or Zip & Co and Afterpay. And for Zip & Co, you actually saw on March 19th, so sort of the end of March and lockdowns had already been in place, that shares were trading at $1.18 and they're now up at $5.77. So a huge, huge increase, you know, multiple times increase just in a space of a few months. The story for Afterpay is similar, around, you know, $9 towards the end of March and up now at $50-$60. So another meteoric rise in terms of prices. And unfortunately, you know, this is a great story, and if you'd invested in these earlier on, then you'd be laughing. But for merchants, unfortunately, a lot of this positive outlook actually comes from higher fees. And that is really where these companies have, you know, strong performances, is on the fees they're able to collect for their services.
Yeah, we've covered this in previous podcasts and in our payments intelligence publication. We are concerned, I think you'd say, overall about the growth of buy now, pay later. I think in the short term, there's some good things there for merchants. In the short term, there's the opportunity to potentially bring in new customers that you wouldn't otherwise get. But once they hit critical mass and that kind of revenue stream is exhausted, all of a sudden you've got this situation whereby you're paying huge fees, much bigger than even Visa and MasterCard's unregulated fees, which is scary. And we've seen from Australia, Latin America, even parts of Europe, that they can grow very quickly. I mean, it's attractive for consumers, particularly during a pandemic and potentially a recession off the back of that, to be able to delay payments over a number of months. So we're seeing it grow, definitely reflected in the share price. And we are overall concerned about the effects it can have over merchants' cash flow and their costs. And if you're a merchant, say in the US, you know, a country that hasn't grown yet, you need to be aware of this in terms of your budgeting and in terms of, you know, your future payment mix, because it might become a point where there's so much consumer pressure you've got to offer it. But if you do get to that point, then you need to make sure that you're budgeting for an increase in payments costs and doing everything you can to mitigate that as well. One potentially concluding point out of all this is that the pandemic has meant it's much more important to optimize your payments costs, because low cost payment methods like cash going down and potential expensive digital payments and some card payments are going up.
Absolutely. So clearly the investor outlook for alternative payment methods is positive, but what does that actually mean for merchants? Well, often it means high merchant fees are on the horizon. So it is very, very important, as Callum said, for merchants to keep track of this. They need to look out for new alternative payment methods, and ultimately really need to assess the value that those payment methods are bringing over and above your existing suite of payment methods, because very, very quickly, costs can spiral out of control. So we hope this week's podcast has been insightful. You can find out more at cmspi.com under Resource Hub.
And if you find this helpful, please do share it with anyone you know who might enjoy this and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to connect and get conversations going, so do connect with us on LinkedIn at cmspi or drop us an email. So finally, then, thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back next week with more payments insights.